We are now beginning a study of the book of Psalms. This book of Psalms is composed of 150 spiritual songs and poems, which have been used by the church in all ages to assist in the worship and in any kind of devotional exercise. It was used as the hymn book of the Second Temple, and the predominant themes of this book are prayer and praise, but the Psalms cover a great variety of religious experiences. They are quoted more frequently in the New Testament than any other book except Isaiah. They are often called the Psalms of David because he was the author of a large number of them. However, the authorship of many of the Psalms is uncertain. It is probable that in some cases the name affixed to certain Psalms may refer to the collector rather than to the author. And here is a suggested list of some of the authors of the book of Psalms. The sons of Korah wrote 11, Asaph 12, Heman, Ethan, Moses, Haggai, Zechariah, and Ezra each wrote one psalm. Solomon wrote two, and Hezekiah wrote a number, but we're not sure how many. But David wrote 73 of these psalms. So truly they can be referred to as the Psalms of David in the general sense because he did write such a large number of them. And we know that David was an inspired man of God, as these other authors were, so we can take these Psalms as the Word of God. We can take them as the thing that God intends for us to use in our worship. When we sing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, there's no more appropriate area to which we could turn for our information. There's no more appropriate material that we could use that we know that would be acceptable to God than this book of Psalms. So it is most beneficial to us to launch into a study of this book of Psalms, to learn what is here for us. We regard this opportunity of studying this book of Psalms as not only being a pleasure, but also being a very profitable experience. We're going to be able to get a look into the things that God would have us to give back to Him in the way of praise and honor and devotion. And when we think of Psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, our first thought should be this book of Psalms, the book that the Lord has given, a miraculously and divinely inspired group of writings, things that we can take and dissect and understand and apply to our lives and use in our daily devotion to God. So we're looking forward to this study of the book of Psalms with great anticipation, and we feel that a study of this book will greatly complement the study of other portions of the Bible. So now let us begin a study of the first psalm. This first psalm does not have a title affixed to it, and we do not know why. We have no reason for this, but we are not sure who the author is. Many think that the author of this first psalm is David, and that very likely could be, but there's nothing about this psalm that shows us that David wrote it. There is no historical reference. There is no way that we can relate it directly to David. Some think that this psalm was used as an introduction to the whole book of Psalms, because its subject is a contrast between the righteous and the wicked. It shows the differences in the righteous person, in the godly person, and the wicked person. It gives these differences in figurative and literal senses, in positive and negative ways. And this would certainly be an appropriate theme to open a book of this nature with, theme to set the scene for what is going to be said in the book of Psalms, the contrast between the righteous and the wicked. However, we do not know that this first psalm was intended to be the introduction to the book of Psalms. We do know, though, that it is a very appropriate beginning for this book of Psalms. Its theme of contrasting the wicked with the righteous is one of the very basic tenets of the Jewish religion. It's one of the most basic teachings in all the Bible. And we find this concept, we find this theme recurring over and over as we study the Bible. So we're going to learn a lot about one of the most basic of all of the teachings of the Bible from this first psalm. So beginning with the first verse of the first psalm, "Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful." Now this phrase that begins by saying, "Blessed is the man," is a phrase describing the person who is going to be following after what God wants. It's describing his state. Blessed. This describes a general state of happiness, a general state of well-being. It's not just limited to one particular kind of happiness, one particular area of happiness, but it's the generalized state of happiness. This person can have problems, can have difficulties arise, can have feelings of inadequacy, feelings of depression, can have anxiety and stress, but still his overall generalized state is one of being blessed, one of being happy. He is one that is able to overcome whatever obstacles may come his way. He is able to have a foundation, able to have a sense of security, able to know what he's doing and why he's doing it, able to live a life that is guided by an intelligent mind. His generalized state is one of being blessed. Blessed is the man. And the word here for man would indicate any person. It can be a rich person. It can be a poor person. It can be a master. It can be a slave. It can be a ruler. It can be someone who is a nobody so far as fame or honor goes. This can apply to any person that wants to follow God. So blessed is the man, or happy is the state of the man that does the things now that this psalm is going to talk about. The man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly. We're seeing now a series of things that this blessed man does not do. This man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly. The word here, walketh, really means a way of life. He does not have a way of life. He does not have a manner of living that is in the counsel of the ungodly. The word for counsel really means some principles or manner of life, manner of teaching. He doesn't follow these principles. He doesn't follow these ways. He doesn't follow these ideas that the ungodly have. And the word for ungodly means those that are guilty of general wickedness. No specific wickedness is mentioned here. Just any kind of thing that would be ungodly. Any kind of thing that would be contrary to what God wants. So this blessed person does not walk, does not have a way of life that is found to be according to the principles or the counsel or the manner of living that the ungodly have, that the general wicked people have. Nor, here's the next phase of this now, nor standeth in the way of sinners. He also does not stand in the way of sinners. Now this word here for stand really means more of a deliberate effort than just walking. Those that would walk may casually find themselves in the way of the ungodly, but those that stand are more deliberate. They put more effort into it. They are in the path of, they're in the way of these ungodly people, and they're waiting for them. They've made some kind of arrangement to meet them. They're standing in the way of. They know this is where they're going to be found, so they put themselves there so that they can meet up with them. They're standing in the way of sinners. And the word for sinners here really means those that miss the mark. It's a little more specific than the word ungodly. It would include those that have graduated to a little higher state of sin. The person who is standing in the way of them is one who is also become more deliberate in his attempts to follow and be with these people that are unrighteous. And then the third area here is, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. Here we find that the state of sin is much more deliberate, much more refined. This person is now sitting in the seat. That is, he is not doing this just casually, but he is deliberately taken a seat with, found the area of association with these ungodly people. Whether he's meeting with them in their club or organization, whether he's actually joined in with them as becoming a member of whatever man-made institution they have that furthers their ends, whether it's to be in entertainment with them, maybe in some kind of a place where he can consume alcohol and get drunk. Maybe in some kind of a place where he can feed his lust in other ways. It doesn't really matter. This is a general term, but it is more deliberate on his part to do this. He's had to make more effort now. He's not casually walking and finding himself in their way, but he is actually in their place. He's sitting in the seat of the scornful. And this word for scornful is a higher degree of sin also. It's more refined. It means those who mock. It is a much more advanced state of sin. It would be a state that's marked by maybe more education, more wisdom, more learning on the part of this person, but he's learned how to be more scornful. He's learned how to be more wily in his ways of mocking and making fun of God and those that follow after God. He's developed some highly sophisticated principles and doctrines and philosophies that he now follows. And he likes to expound upon these principles and to convert others to his way of living and his way of thinking, which is against the things that God would have. So the blessed man is not like this. And he finds that he is removed from this way of living. And we see here a wonderful graduation of the comparative ways that man can become involved in sin. He can first of all find himself walking, that is casually walking, in the counsel of the ungodly, casually following something that really he shouldn't be following in the way of a philosophy. Then next he finds himself standing in the way of the sinners. That is, he is more deliberate in this. He's putting more effort into it. He wants to do it, and he's arranging it so that he can do this. And then thirdly, he's sitting in the seat of the scornful. He's right there among them as one of them. He's joined in with them. And whatever place they are in, wherever they're congregated, then he's one of those that are there. And then we see these ungodly people that this man is not associating with, that he could associate with. They're also in a graduated state of ungodliness. First of all, they are called ungodly. They're just generalized wickedness, any kind of wickedness. Then they are the sinners, that is, those that miss the mark. They're more deliberate in their sin. They're more refined in their sin. And then they are the scornful, that is, those who mock, those who are more highly refined, more educated, have a deeper philosophy in the things that they're doing which are wrong and the things that are opposed to God. So we have a beautiful picture here of what the blessed man avoids, of the things that he's not found doing, of the negative aspects of his life as he abstains from the things that are displeasing to God. Those things are spelled out here in a generalized way so that we then can apply this to our lives and we can get much benefit from what is taught here about what the blessed man does not do. Now this little psalm gives a comparison of the negatives and the positives. And what we're having in this first verse is the negative side. The thing that this blessed man does not do. The thing that he abstains from. The thing that he knows that he should not be a part of his life. And so we have the completeness of this by seeing both sides of it. Now, beginning in the second verse, we're going to have the things that are positive in his life, the things that he does do, the things that he puts in the place of following after the counsel and the way and the seat of those that are ungodly. And this then will complete the picture, and it will perfect the teaching about what the blessed man is and is not. Verse 2, "But his delight is in the law of the Lord." Now his delight, this blessed man's delight, or his pleasure, is in the law of the Lord. That is, he derives pleasure, he derives satisfaction, he derives a sense of satisfying his needs by dwelling on, by thinking about, by living according to, by applying the precepts of the law of the Lord. It's in the law of the Lord. The more he can learn about this law, the more he can become involved with this law, the more he can make it a part of his life, then this is where his pleasure is. This is where his delight is. It's in the law of the Lord. The things that are outside of the law of the Lord, the things that are contrary to what God would have man to do, the things that are displeasing to God, he finds no delight in those things. He has so schooled and so educated himself that he has learned to have delight, learned to have pleasure, learned to have satisfaction in the things that are according to God. And this is described here as the law of the Lord. The law here is a teaching or a precept of God. And it would have to include all of the law of God that was known at the time this psalm was written. And of course, as more and more of God's law has been given, or more of His will has been revealed, then it would include those things as they become known to man, as also being a part of that thing that gives this blessed man delight. It's in the law of the Lord. So whatever area that man could be involved in that would be consistent with the law of the Lord, then he can find delight in that and be according to the blessed man, be according to what is going to constitute the blessed man. His delight's in the law of the Lord. And then the last part of verse 2 says, and in His law doth he meditate day and night. Now this word for meditate really means to think, to concentrate upon, to spend some time pondering about. It's in His law, or about His law, that he's thinking day and night. And this phrase day and night really means that he does it continually. And this would not have to mean that this person never stops thinking about God's law, but it means that it is such a habitual act, such a recurring act, such an act that is ever-present in this person's life, that he does it on a continual basis. He takes time to think about God's law. He sets aside a time for study, a time for meditation, a time for delving into God's law. He also doesn't limit himself so that it can only be one time of the day or one time of the night, but he finds that there is any time that's convenient for him. He then can meditate upon God's law. There's no time when he has to shut God's law out. He can do it during a lull, during his business hours or business time. He can do it during his leisure time. He can do it during time that has been specifically set apart for meditating upon God's law. And so it's something that's with him all the time. He's never actually completely removed from God's law. It's always there just under the surface, ready to be recalled, ready to be used, ready to be drawn as a sword by a soldier who's prepared for battle. So it is a continual thing. It is a day and night thing. There is no end to the time or limit to the time as to when this man may be able to use, to think about, to dwell upon this law of God. And we're talking about the law of God, the thing that God then has given to man as His will. Those precepts, those commands, those statutes, those judgments that God lays out for man to follow. And of course, this man then is going to be one who does not want to violate anything that is laid out here as the duty of man. He's going to want to do it all. He's going to want to be in accordance with anything that God has laid out as a desirable thing for man to be doing in the sight of God. So he's going to be a complete follower of God. He's going to be a person that is truly blessed. And we're going to see now what the result of this is going to be. How this is going to make him the blessed man. How this is going to make him the person that is happy and contented and stable in this life. Just as the negative aspects of his life have to do with abstaining from and staying away from those things that are according to the ungodly, according to the sinners, even so the positive aspects of his life have to do with the law of God, thinking about it, meditating upon it, having delight in it. So he positively then is for and about and involved in the things of God, and he negatively is opposed to and against the things that are ungodly. Verse 3 is going to tell us what the results of this is now. What happens to this man that makes him so blessed? What happens to this person that makes him in such a desirable state since he does follow God? Verse 3 says, and he shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that bringeth forth his fruit in his season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. Now let's notice the first part of verse 3. He shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water. This is not a tree that has just come up casually, accidentally, or inadvertently someplace, but this is a tree that has been planted. It's been put in a certain place deliberately there so that it would be in the very best place possible for this tree to do well. A tree planted, and it's planted by the rivers of water. And this phrase, rivers of water, really means a stream of water that would be consistent with an irrigated place, a place that has been made fertile by having an abundance of water piped or sent through a little channel right to the very place where the water is needed, right to where this tree is going to be. So this tree is situated in the most ideal place that a tree could ever be, a tree that is planted by the rivers of water. It's going to have plenty of nourishing water there for it. It doesn't say what kind of a tree it is, but we know that it's a tree that brings forth some kind of fruit. It's a fruitful tree. And so it has to be a tree that's beneficial, a tree that's desirable, a tree that's going to be one that leaves its environment better for having been there than if it had not have been there. A tree that will not need to be destroyed because it was in the way, or it was a nuisance, or it was unfruitful, or was in any way offensive. This tree is going to flourish. It's going to do well. It's planted by the rivers of water. A tree that bringeth forth his fruit in his season. This is the picture of a tree that doesn't lose its fruit too soon. It doesn't have the fruit fall off because of lack of nourishment or because of drought. But it holds the fruit till it's ripe, until it's ready to be used. And then in its season, it brings forth the fruit. It brings forth what is expected of it. It produces like it ought to. So it's a very fruitful tree. It's a very beneficial tree. And that's the blessed state now that this man is going to be in who follows after the will of God, the person that we're talking about in this first psalm. This is a beautiful picture of prosperity, and consequently it's a beautiful picture then of his blessed or happy state. We know that any person that is bringing forth good fruit, a person who is able to produce the things that are good, the things that he desires to produce, then this is a blessed, a happy state, and it's the state of the person then who is following after God. And that brings our lesson at this time to a close. In our next lesson, we will continue with the rest of this first psalm. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friend.